jobs, loyalty pledges, and single-digit COVID numbers in Victoria. This is The Week on Wednesday. Hello and welcome to The Week on Wednesday. I am your host, Ben Davison, and with me, as always, is the lovely, is the very Bavarian-looking today for some reason, Van Badham, guiding columnist and just general socialist extraordinaire.
Thank you. Bavarian socialist extraordinaire, I suppose, today. But as we know, I've never said no to a Bavarian. So, you know, we are where we are.
Indeed. So we are coming out late today, but we are coming out hard out of the blocks. We're going to be talking about jobs. We're going to be talking about loyalty pledges and some good news coming out of Victoria, which is starting to look like a world leader now.
It certainly is. We'd also like to acknowledge the presence of our dog, Germanicus, who is enjoying this beautiful twilight by picking around the corners of our shed.
Indeed. So, jobs.
Jobs. You love talking about jobs. Have you got any good news about jobs this week, Ben?
I don't know about good news about jobs, but I certainly have lots of news about jobs.
Tell us the news you've got about jobs.
So unemployment has gone up and the number of jobs in Australia has declined by 115,000.
115,000?
Yes.
Since when?
Since September. So these are payroll jobs. This is a metric that the ABS started recording not that long ago, really. I think last 8 months, 2 years maybe. But this is jobs that come up on the kind of automated payroll system and go through the tax system that way. That is a lot of jobs. When you think about the fact that the budget measures that the government has spruced, right, the immediate asset write-off and loss carryback for business was expected to create 50,000 jobs. So that's supposed to create 50,000 jobs. That multi-billion dollar, $31.6 billion measure. So they're going to spend $31.6 billion to create half as many jobs as has been lost in about a month. This is a huge, huge problem in the way that the Liberals have constructed the budget. So I talk about jobs, I talk about the budget, because really these things go hand in hand. When you're shedding 110,000, 115,000 jobs and the budget is spending $31.6 billion just to create 50,000 jobs, then you're spending $632,000 per job, and you're still not even getting half the jobs back that you lost in a month.
So you're spending $632,000 per job, but you're not paying those jobs $632,000.
Oh, hell no. Hell no. Because the money is essentially for companies, right?
So Frydenberg lost $60 billion, didn't he? Wasn't that one of his great tricks this year? Right. He just misplaced $60 billion. Are we quite sure he knows how to count?
But he goes on. This is the problem, right? If he knows how to count, he's doing a really bad job of it. It's like a cartoon where he got banged in the head and he forgot how to count and then occasionally gets banged in the head and then overcounts. Like, it's a really bad Warner Brothers circa 1998 cartoon, four o'clock in the afternoon type of thing. Because the other big thing in the budget that was supposed to create jobs is the personal income tax cuts, right? This is $17.8 billion. Can you guess how many jobs this is supposed to create?
Tell us how many jobs this is creating.
50,000 jobs. So you've got, what, nearly, what is that, $50 billion worth of expenditure creating less jobs than have been lost in a month.
This is really bad.
But this is the kind of neoliberal trickle-down ideology.
That we give all the money to the corporations and they'll just sort it out, even though we know it is a matter of law in Australia. It is a matter of business law that corporations have to prioritise dividends to shareholders.
Well, they have to prioritise profits.
Well, this is the thing, and it's actually a part of the way that we administer the notion of business in Australia, is that we do encourage profit-making, and yet we seem surprised when we give vast sums to private businesses and they don't spend them on the things that we need. You know, the things that maybe, hear me out here, Ben, I've got this crazy idea that we as a citizenry could all make like some kind of small contribution to, like, I don't know, some kind of administrative structure that existed to represent us and solve all of our problems. And they could use our collected wealth to do that.
Well, this is the...
Is that crazy?
Well, that's not crazy, but the crazy, crazy, crazy thing that has happened today is that the Commonwealth government is also sacking 400 Centrelink contact centre workers.
In an unemployment crisis.
In Melbourne.
Oh!
the very state where the Commonwealth says that there's not enough happening for jobs.
But I thought they were blaming Dan Andrews.
Well, they are still blaming Dan Andrews. It's still Dan Andrews' fault if you're listening to them. But the thing that again, just kind of when you start to pull on these threads, so, you know, you think, oh, well, Centrelink workers, if they're hiring Centrelink workers, then they're doing exactly what you said. They're using our collective to employ people, give them steady work, give them good conditions and lift up society.
But you and I know that Centrelink is not really employing these people.
They are not.
No.
Because who is employing them?
Serco, one of the worst corporations in the world.
That's right, Serco. So
the service company.
These 400 people in Melbourne who have just been burned out of the labour force, not only have they lost their jobs, and I shouldn't chuckle, but it's so enraging, you can't help but kind of go, these people must be the joker. They just want to see the world burn, right?
I heard it was a very bitter laugh from you, Benny.
Yeah. So these poor people who've had their jobs taken away, 400 of them, are also being thrown out without any form of redundancy payment, any form of compensation, because, of course, Serco doesn't employ these people in full-time jobs.
Does it subcontract them?
They're either casuals or labour hire, right?
Right.
So you've got this absolute twisted ideology working its way through our labour market, through people's jobs and through people's lives. Not only is it failing to replace the jobs that have been lost because of the pandemic, have been lost because companies decided to take JobKeeper and use it to pay dividends and prop up profits rather than keep people employed, it's actually destroying jobs. And there is conflict about this too. Let me say about the numbers of jobs that these tax cuts and trickle down will even create. Some economists are saying that the 50,000 jobs that these personal income tax cuts are supposed to create could be as few as 13,000. 13,000. And for that, we're spending $13 billion.
Can I ask a political question?
Sure. That's what this show's about.
I do love asking you a political question. Could it be, Ben, and this is another one of my crazy ideas, that the relentless attacks on the lockdown in Victoria from the federal government are being used as scapegoating device for their own structural mismanagement of job creation in the economy?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about that whatsoever, because when you look at their daily attacks on Dan Andrews, their daily attacks, even on Anastasia Palaszczuk, right, who has the Queensland economy creating jobs faster than any other state economy in Australia right now, right? Like that's a reality, that's a fact.
Because they are actually sinking their money into things like public transport and building the apparatus of public transport, electric vehicle superhighways, the massive solar farms they're building up north, all very positive environmental, climate active policies, by the way,
and
yes.
Healthcare and education.
Of course.
Actually hiring these people to work for the government and to have proper jobs. So, of course, they're being attacked. They're being attacked relentlessly by the Morrison government, who's squandering billions and billions and billions of dollars on these programs that are not creating jobs. And I'll give you another example here, right? So that $13 billion, if it had just been split evenly between universities, childcare, healthcare, aged care, and the creative arts, right? The five of the most heavily impacted industries by COVID, five industries that are predominantly employ women, then some economists are saying that would create 162,000 jobs. So even if you take the Treasury's high-end estimate of that $13 billion as tax cuts at 50,000, you can create three times as many just by directly supporting those industries that have been impacted, those industries where there are women who need jobs, those industries that actually tend to, when you think about universities and healthcare and childcare, less so aged care and creative arts, but those earlier industries, they do tend to employ people on decent conditions, even if they are sometimes quite low wages. And of course, the government's not going to do that. They'd much rather hand out tax cuts that are going to essentially be squandered in this economic crisis. And by squandered, I mean they're going to be saved. We're seeing household savings jump massively.
We're seeing household savings jump massively amongst people who are already wealthy.
Oh, of course.
And you and I know from the town that we live in that we are physically seeing in the street, because we only have one little centralised shopping area, there are less shoppers out. And we know by speaking to our friends who run small businesses in this community, it's because JobKeeper is going, jobs are going, people are under more and more financial pressure, and they're spending less, which is, of course, creating a sink effect problem for local small business as well.
Oh, the true economic...
Corporations are doing great, though. People who are already wealthy, what a fine time for them.
Well, the true economic vandalism of all of this, of course, is that to cut JobKeeper and to say that JobSeeker will be cut again before Christmas, at the same time as not having a real plan to replace the jobs that are gone from the economy, let alone create more jobs that are still needed. Don't forget, we were on a bad trajectory when it comes to jobs and job security and wages before we went into COVID.
Yes, I was very surprised when Anthony Albanese was on Q&A last week and he was asked about the Morrison recession. He didn't remind everybody directly. We were in a per capita recession before coronavirus. We were in a per capita recession before the last election. And of course, the Liberal Party spin doctors come out and tell us they're such great economic managers because everybody's sponsored by a bank and wears a nice suit. And it's like the economic management of your own personal bank balance, Daryl Maguire, Angus Taylor, is not the same thing as managing an economy that works for everybody. And I think Australians have got to get this really clear. When the Liberal Party are talking about economic management, they're not talking about outcomes from me or you or our friends who run small businesses or the people who work for them. They're talking about economic outcomes for people who own or have significant shareholdings in major multinational private corporations. That's economic management, and that's tax cuts, and that's driving down wages, that's union busting, that's all the things that conservative governments do to make conditions unfairly favourable for corporations.
And that's what we've seen now with the budget. And we're seeing in real time the impact on jobs, because...
We're seeing it in our streets.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, it's a huge problem. It's one that the Morrison government is not going to be able to address. And Treasury estimates on unemployment show that it's going to continue to go up. You're seeing people like Ross Gittins talk about this being an attempt at some kind of blokey budget, which feeds into all of the things that we've been saying for weeks about how the Morrison government has left women behind, and those tax cuts will go to men overwhelmingly, and they will go to the wealthy overwhelmingly, and they will go to corporations that already have really strong balance sheets. So it's a bit of a shame. The other issue that we need to cover off today...
The loyalty tests. These are just amazing. I don't know if anybody's been following this as closely as I have.
I think we know someone, Osmond Chu, who might have been following this pretty closely.
Well, this is, for those of you who aren't across this story, it's just completely extraordinary. So there's a Senate inquiry going on at the moment into issues facing diaspora communities in Australia. Diaspora communities obviously being communities of people who have migrated here from various cultural backgrounds. Senator Erica Betts, literally like one of the most, I think we can describe him as... infamous, notorious.
He's awful.
He is a terrible human being. He has a background of being, quite frankly, a homophobic bigot. And now he's demanding, like, and this is true, I'm more than happy for Erica Betts to attempt to sue me on that one, because truth is a good defence in defamation. And I do remember the propaganda put out that you authored in Tasmania against decriminalisation of homosexuality in that state. Eric, I think a lot of us do.
Mm-hmm.
But Erica Betts,
Industrial Relations Minister, who also wanted to take us back to the dark ages.
Yeah, yeah, who campaigned against minimum wage. Good on you, Eric. Erica Betts is on this inquiry where people who've given submissions into the issues facing diaspora communities. Mm-hmm. For those of you who've never participated in a Senate inquiry, I seriously recommend that you try and make a Senate submission at some point in your life, or at least go along. And certainly take with you anybody you know who votes Liberal, because what they will see from Liberal and National Party representatives in those fora are extraordinary. Mm. Because let's remember, nobody votes for senators because of their personality. They vote for them for their party alignment. So the most hardcore party apparatchik colleagues become senators. Yeah. That's how it works. And my God, so Erica Birtz questioned three of these people who had written submissions. One of them is our friend Osman Chu. Another one is my friend Wisa Chow. Another one is Yun Jiang, who's a woman who I don't know, but who was participating in this. And they're from quite different backgrounds. Osman was born in Australia. Wisa is Hong Kong born, but grew up in Australia. Jung is Chinese born, that grew up in Australia. These are different things, different cultural experiences. Yeah. All three were giving evidence to the Senate inquiry about what it's like to grow up in a diaspora community, what their issues are. And Erica Birtz literally demanded that they answer whether they are willing to unconditionally condemn the Chinese Communist Party dictatorship.
Just
like,
what is that?
It is bonkers. It's like, you know, having eaten sauerkraut once and then being asked if you'll disavow the Third Reich. Like, it's
and that's an interesting point too that you've just raised, because Erica Birtz has many, many times expressed great levels of outrage and disgust when his relationship to Ottawa Birtz, who was in fact
an SS commander in Vichy France, which is, you know, that's not a small role.
And who Eric Abetz is legitimately related to. And we're not suggesting that they're in any way the same person, because they're clearly not.
Yes,
one is named Eric and one is named Otto.
People's politics and ideological beliefs are not, spoiler alert, genetically transferable. You can't catch beliefs from other people. But you genuinely have to develop them yourself.
But to be that person and then to suggest that these other people should have to take this denouncement and this sort of loyalty test in a Senate hearing, you can be done for perjury if you lie in a Senate hearing too, right? So this is a really formal setting. This is not like, you know, you're down the pub and go, oh, mate, come on. Even that would be wrong, by the way. But to do this in a Senate hearing is a corruption of our democracy, isn't it?
It is absolutely extraordinary. And of course, you know, Osman have said no. Like,
good on him.
I'm not going to do
that. Yeah, I wouldn't do it.
Like, it's completely ridiculous. And, you know, they were attending the hearing voluntarily. They were there at the invitation of the committee. And then to have this question sort of thrust at them that either you denounce the government of another country or you're not a real Australian, all of these people are Australian. They are Australians of Chinese heritage.
Yeah.
And that's not good enough. But what's particularly outrageous of this, you sort of expect it from Erica Birtz because he is such a dinosaur.
Yeah.
And because he has been associated with every rear guard, you know, retroactive, recalcitrant, conservative position.
Yeah.
This is a man who is desperately, desperately regretful that the 1950s have ended. And he's been like that since the 1950s. So you sort of expect it from him. But what is disgusting and is that obviously the call has gone out from the community for Scott Morrison, Josh Frydenberg and the government to denounce what Abetz did, because it's disgraceful.
Yeah.
And guess what, Ben? They have not.
Right?
They have palmed it off. You know, like, no one's saying that the Communist Party government of China is great.
No.
No one's saying that. Not with the internship of the Uyghurs in particular. Not with the way that they run global trade. Not with the way they run labour conditions in China or that small suppressing democracy everywhere thing. But you shouldn't have to answer that question because you're an Australian of Chinese heritage. It's absolutely appalling that individuals are being, essentially, this is a McCarthyist line of inquiry from the government. And for Scott Morrison to not call it out, for Scott Morrison just not to say Erica Birtz was completely out of line, I unconditionally apologise on behalf of the Australian government, that's a real problem. Because we've seen it in Victoria. We have seen this anti-Chinese narrative that's been pushed around coronavirus.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen a ratcheting up on social media of some old-style racist xenophobia against Asian Australians. We know that Asian Australian communities have been keeping registers of racist incidents towards them. And is what Scott Morrison taking a bet each way? Like, if he doesn't call it out but he's sort of not involved, then maybe he can play both sides of that fence. And it's like, dude, where's your courage? Asian Australians are, here's the key word, Australian. And it's your responsibility as the Prime Minister to ensure equal rights for us all and not have one of your crazy Tasmanian senators question their loyalty like a McCarthyist lunatic in a Senate inquiry.
Well, this is the thing. Are we going to have people who have English heritage now pulled before the Senate and they have to denounce Boris Johnson? I mean, I'd be happy to do it.
Yes, yes, but, of course, because you have citizenship, don't you?
No, I don't have citizenship. But my mum was born in England. So, you know, we could have people from, you know, what, people from France have to denounce Macron?
I'm a dual citizen of New Zealand. I am never going to denounce the Pinky Bar. And they are called jandals, and shut up.
Well, this is the thing. This is the, you know, it's clearly racist. And frankly, to suggest otherwise ignores the fact that he didn't ask anybody else from any other background to denounce the government of their heritage.
But it's just the irony, too. It's like, what are the issues facing diaspora communities? It's like, oh, I don't know, structural prejudice and racism. What do you reckon, Erica Betts?
Yeah, well, that's right. Thanks for demonstrating the issue so clearly.
Oh, it's just really
Senator
disappointing because you just think, no, really, we are moving forward, aren't we, as a society? We are. But how humiliating. Like,
well, never forget what Paul Keating said about the Senate. It is unrepresentative swill.
Benjamin, we've had this discussion before. We've had this. Do you know I'm very fond of having a Senate? I love
bicameral I'm just saying that, you know, you shouldn't be concerned that individual senators are representative of the community's views, because they are in fact unrepresentative, and they are almost unrepresentative by design. And Erica Betts is fulfilling his role very nicely, thank you very much, to be held up as the model unrepresentative swill that sits in the Senate.
Do you know who I also feel sorry for?
Who's that?
Tasmania.
Well,
I feel sorry for Tasmania. To have Erica Betts on your conscience, it's a blot.
It is. It's such a lovely state in so many other ways.
Yeah, and the food's really good. Yeah. Anyway.
But again, unrepresentative. Erica Betts, unrepresentative.
All right. Everyone apart from Erica Betts. But not, because Morrison hasn't called it out.
And that is disgraceful, and he should call it out. And the week on Wednesday is calling you out, Prime Minister, until you call out Erica Betts and his systemic racism and his victimisation of Australian citizens of Chinese heritage. It's unacceptable, and the Australian people won't stand for it.
Boo.
Boo. All right, we have to move on.
We do have to move on.
The good news.
Happy news. Victoria, the place to be.
It turns out, so while Europe is now descending into a hellfire of second and third waves, America seems to be on a constant roller coaster of COVID. Victoria has got the second wave down to single digits. And in fact, there was some thought that it might have got to zero yesterday. Turns out that was a reinfection. So it's one yesterday. I think it was three today, and we've had 4 or 5 days in a row now of single digits. And European countries are starting to adopt Victorian models, including, interestingly enough, Sweden. So Adam Crichton from The Australian, that one's for you, buddy, around suppressing the virus. So, of course, the really good news about that, putting aside the finger in the eye to the Tories who've been attacking Dan Andrews and the good people of Victoria for the last 100 days, is that it means that our economy here in Victoria is starting to open up again. We're going to see more announcements in the coming days and certainly in the coming weeks about how we can get things moving again. And unlike with the Morrison government and its trickle-down approach to jobs, I feel very confident that a government that has been well-known for building things, well-known for investing in people, is going to do that again, and is going to do that in a big way when it has its budget announcement in the next couple of weeks, I think. So, look, that's the good news.
I just think it's amazing. And, you know, we live in Victoria. It's been really hard, and we have the longest lockdown in the world. But I just want to stress to my listeners, we've been really lucky in Australia. We had some good fortune. You know, we are an island continent, and that made things a bit easier for us. But I have friends in the United States and in England and in France who've had coronavirus. Mm. And these are women who are my age, in, you know, the same sort of health that I'm in. One of those friends was sick for 4 months. She had what they called the long tail version, where she has been incapacitated. She hasn't been able to work. For people who go on, oh, it's just like the flu. It's not like the flu. Mm. And while, yes, not everybody dies from coronavirus, the level of sickness and incapacitation is extraordinary. The friend of mine in France thinks that she's sustained permanent heart damage, like she can't get her breath back. She struggles with stairs. And one of the things we know about coronavirus is that it attacks the tissues of the heart, it attacks the tissues of the lungs and the brain. And what we're looking at with the disease is a time bomb around infections. Even people who are asymptomatic now doctors predict have a really high chance of sickness in the future.
So the good news is... of course, that Victoria now has got the situation much, much more under control. Of course, Australia overall is in a really good position. And I really want to stress this is the good news at the end of the show. We're in a good position. We don't want to give back any of those gains. We don't want to end up like France. We don't want to end up like the UK or the US.
I'll be keeping my mask on, Benny.
I'll be keeping my mask on too. All right, folks, keep your masks on. That's the message here.
And thank you so much for all your support. Thanks for following us on Twitter and telling your friends about the show. If you haven't done it, you should, because we're building this wonderful audience and we love being part of the conversation. Email us, tweet us, Facebook us, send us questions. If there are things you'd like us to talk about, we're more than happy to do that. Ben and I do this from our shed, so we're pretty free and easy.
And that's the end of the show for the week.
You're a wonderful person, Ben.
Oh, I love you, Vanny.
I know you do. I love you too.
Bye.
Bye.